Welcome to the Evident Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this April the 15th on the West Coast, now April the 16th on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. We'd like to also welcome those listening in on Wind Talkers Radio Network around the world and appreciate you being with us. Hope you find tonight's show to be interesting. Well, there's a lot of questions that have surfaced in regard to what is going on with Japan. And over the past few weeks, there have been numerous sightings of vehicles from other parts of the galaxy. And that's being talked about on the internet, but not in the mainstream media. Or is it? Actually, we're going to be talking about both topics with tonight's guest. But before we bring Jim Murray on, I'm going to share some music that'll take you outside the box a bit. And we're going to be discussing this topic also. This is an original. This is called Spirals. that spirals. Composed, arranged, performed, produced by yours truly. And I hope you enjoyed that. And I hope tonight's guest was able to stay with us. We've been having this problem at the outset of the show for the past month or two now. And he is my regular Monday night guest on Evident Footprints. Why? Well, he's a scientist, inventor, author, lecturer, teacher, and my co-host. So I've got to have him on. He's really a good friend as well. A very nice, warm person, and yet he won't put up with any jive. My good friend, Jim Murray. Jim, welcome to the show.
Hey, Don. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here as usual. I almost wasn't here, though. I got cut off there while you guys were playing that interesting music.
Yeah, that was Spirals. That's sort of my musical interpretation of what a vortex looks like and what it does. So, I guess ironically, the music is filled with what are called tone spirals. So there you have it.
I'm not too familiar with tone spirals, but it was an interesting piece, at least the part that I heard.
Okay. Well, I'm glad we were able to get you back on board with us. Jim, last week, or I should say 2 weeks ago, actually, last week, General Jeremiah visited, and folks got to hear that if they tuned into the show. It was actually a rebroadcast from May 29th, 2009, when we got a call from the United Galactic Federation. And I actually talked about the Federation and the nature of space on my show a couple of nights ago. And I was able to actually even show some ridiculous statements about life out there in the solar system, in the galaxy, and in the universe, the comments that NASA has been making over the past few years. And pretty recently, if you recall, there was a mention of a worm that had been found on a fragment of a meteorite that was being examined in a laboratory. And thus they concluded that there quite possibly is life somewhere else out there in the universe. And so you're talking about 2011, and then I came across a video of NASA's claim to have picked up radio communications back in July of 2004 when Cassini had reached Saturn. And I have a clip that I'd like to play for you, if you don't mind, and for the listening audience, even though I played it early in the week. It warrants playing again with you on the show. I'd like to get your comments on what we're hearing here. And here we go. This is called Alien Speech, found in NASA's Saturn radio signal. You're going to hear are emitted as radio waves. Don Gurnett of the University of Iowa says his team reduced their frequencies by a factor of 5 to bring them into the range of human hearing. Gurnett says he was completely astonished when he heard the musical notes. ¶¶ The tones are short, typically lasting between 1 and 3 seconds. And unlike the ethereal sliding tones associated with other cosmic processes, everyone is quite distinct. The evidence that each tone is produced hints that chunks of ice from meteorites are at the cause. Same radio signal now raised in pitch by 12 tones in Cool Edit Audio Editor. Sounds like speech, NASA's quote on the file. A most intriguing file. We do not know what to make of it. Tape was courtesy of NASA. Now, Jim Murray, that was in 2004. Did they forget about that, or was this a fudged recording?
Well, I think it's pretty obvious what it was, Don. It's obviously an orchestral arrangement played by space worms.
Oh. And they did the film score as well.
Talent the little buggers.
Yes.
Well, it's a pretty amazing sound. I've never heard anything quite like that. And there is a point there where it does sound almost like, you know, speech involved in a modulated signal of some sort.
Yes, I'm sure that the signal was scrambled, aside from being probably sent at a very high frequency and then probably step down to a much lower frequency at the point at which it would be heard and received. I really find it, what to me, the farce here is that this came out in 2004 and the story about the worm in 2011. Do they forget these things, or is it like need to know?
Well, I really don't have any answer for you because I'm not familiar with NASA's practices. But, you know, it's very typical of the left hand not knowing what the right hand is doing. You know, one guy generates one lie, and then there's another fellow somewhere else that generates a totally different lie. And I guess the overall assumption is the stupid people out there won't know the difference anyway.
Mm-hmm. Now, coincidentally, that radio signal is coming from the mothership of the United Galactic Federation. That's basic communication from the mothership to some of the other ships that are scattered about the solar system and I suppose the galaxy as well. So it's not a big mystery. And then it's ludicrous that they're afraid to tell anybody this. They put this out there as if they want to see how many people are really paying attention, or they figure we have no impact on changing the reality, that it's that far gone. But you would think something that significant, and to me, I mean, it doesn't blow my mind, let's put it that way, because I know these people exist already. I've seen their craft. So, you know, picking up a radio signal is no big deal to me. But it's the fact that it's either the worms doing it, or there are more than worms out there. I mean, we're being a bit tongue-in-cheek, but that's...
Well, I don't really understand how anybody can look at a starlit night and come to the conclusion that all that real estate out there is totally barren and void, and we're the only species that has evolved with any intelligence, you know, in that entire myriad of possibilities. It just, for me, it would be a lot easier for 50% of all those planetary systems to house life than for us to be mathematical and biological freaks, which is what we would have to be in order to be the only intelligent life form in the whole universe. I mean, it just astounds me that they actually expect people to swallow that.
Yeah, and it doesn't say much for the rest of the beings either, does it? Using that as the benchmark for intelligence. There are intelligent people out there, but the way the masses act, they've really been dumbed down and in a state of fear. The events that have been occurring over the past month or so are a perfect example of how people jump to conclusions, and even though they know the governments lie to the people, certainly we know NASA lies to the people and have been doing so since their inception. What is there to be really shocked about? Those people that are going to be afraid are the ones that are totally in the box right now anyway. They're not listening to this show. They've probably fallen asleep in front of their television sets. They're not even watching them. So, you know, there's the issue of what is going on, and whether or not some people want to pay attention or not, I think is inconsequential in that sense. I think it matters a heck of a lot to anyone who is paying attention and is demanding answers and isn't getting them. You know, there are lots of craft being sighted around the world in great numbers now. I have another clip I could play on that, but I don't want to take that time because I know that we want to discuss what's going on the planet as well in terms of strange earthquakes and tidal waves and what have you. So would you like to comment at all on what I'm saying? I hope I don't sound like I'm rambling because this is such a broad topic and it's difficult to, you know, to focus it on one aspect.
Well, I don't have any problem with the idea of the universe being literally teeming with life. The real thing that I find strange is what they expect to gain by trying to hide that fact. Okay, sure, so it's going to be a cultural shock if people find out that there's other life in the universe. But, I mean, they go through cultural shocks all the time. It doesn't seem to really bother anybody. I think human beings on this planet are numb already from cultural shocks. So what would be another one? You know, what difference does it make?
Mm-hmm.
As far as the fact that there's something going on in space, I don't think that should surprise anybody either. You know, if you go back and you look at the history of this planet, there are happenings which are recorded in numerous cultures that are not explainable in terms of everyday life. But they become pretty clear once you start to interpret them from the perspective of a planetary war or visitors from beyond the Earth or the arrival of craft with higher technologies, you know, all these types of things. So whatever is going on has been going on. It's been going on for thousands of years. And it may very well be that something's coming to a head. That's certainly possible. But anybody that's really a clear thinker and is not afraid to examine evidence objectively and without bias has to conclude that our past is nothing like we've been taught that it is. And this planet has been visited numerous times in the past, and something is still continuing to interfere with our life and our progress. And it's not all from the surface of this world, but from beyond. So, you know, all these craft that are flying around and people are noticing them more and more, I think it's about time that that whole thing is just brought out in the open.
Well, I agree. In fact, we do that quite often on this show. I would trust the least the official announcement coming from the government, if you get my meaning, because they lie about everything else. Why would they suddenly tell us the truth about that? What could they tell us that we don't know in that regard? Some of us, not all of us, but some of us know what's going on. What could they tell us beyond that? And we've been
I think that part of the thing that would come out if they decided to tell the truth would be whatever their involvement is in it.
Yes.
I mean, I don't think that they have clean hands. I think that from things I've heard, technological secrets, if you want to call them that, have been bartered for. Genetic material from human beings has been given to various visitors, and they share bases in some cases, from what I've heard. You're not going to tell me that things like that can go on without somebody in the higher echelons of government not knowing about it. That's even more preposterous than assuming that space is unpopulated.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's ironic, but you don't need to be in government to know about it. And that's something that people have to begin to recognize, because those that know it lie about it, and it's obvious they're lying about it. I just gave an example. I gave, you know, two examples of how they don't even pay attention to the information that they release. Now, here's something interesting. If both of these stories were bogus and they were just created to put the thought form out there to create a discussion like the one we're having, let's take those off the table. There are still people from other parts of the universe near or on our planet. There's no doubt about that. So we don't need the government to tell us this, you see. Oh, it has to be an official announcement? If I were the no-legged Mac Daddy, I'd be looking for my certificate of live birth. You know? You want to comment, Jim?
Well, I think that the people are so conditioned that, first of all, they do expect announcements of that caliber to come from authorized sources. That's one problem. I think the other problem is something you and I were discussing earlier, and that is that not everybody outside of government-funded laboratories and scientific groups are in the position to make the necessary observations, measurements, collection of data, and what have you, that would allow a lot of this stuff to be confirmed. And so without that, it's a lot easier for people to just scoff at the whole thing if it isn't coming from a recognized source. You're always going to have individuals that are outside the box and have always been outside the box. I mean, some of the most amazing stuff that came out back in the 60s and 70s when I was really into this sort of thing came from amateurs, but they were the type of amateurs that might as well be professionals because, you know, they pursue this with a passion that probably exceeds that of somebody who's got a PhD in astrophysics. And they've, you know, invested their hard-earned money over a period of 20 or 30 years to build an observatory in their backyard or, you know, on top of their house or wherever they manage to put it. And they spend all their spare time looking at the sky and taking photographs and learning how to do various calculations and photographic procedures, and bingo, they discover something. Well, you know, I think it was even an amateur that discovered one of these comets that people were talking about not too long ago. So, you know, there are people who do get out there and do things on their own outside of the so-called recognized circles. But then the situation breaks them down in a different way, because the average individual will look at a person like that as a kook. They won't pay any attention to him anyway. And if the government gets the lowdown on something that they're doing, depending on the magnitude of the discovery, they may absorb the information into the general database, or they may just ignore it. And if the guy makes too much noise, he'll be vilified. So in the long run, it's difficult to say, you know, what has to happen in order for people to really start to get into the acceptance of these phenomena. Mm-hmm. Aside from something actually landing, you know, right in Washington, perhaps right on the White House lawn, it's going to take some kind of a international exposure that goes beyond anything that can be suppressed before you're going to get everybody on board.
Well, we sort of expect somebody to give us this authoritative declaration that would be something acceptable to the dumbed down masses, and the rest of us would just as well, we'd be just as upset or disgusted with the fact that they're trying to make mileage with something that's already been out there. You see, they, in a sense, it's when they come out and admit it, should they come out and admit it under any condition, they're chiming in with what we've been talking about publicly for the past almost four years on this show. Let's not forget about that. We have archives of that, right? So this isn't really necessary for us to have some kind of official declaration, because many of us see it. Many of us know it. How many are going to hear the announcement and even have it register? Or how many are going to be able to retain it for a week before they forget about it, like they do who won the Super Bowl or who won the last World Series? You know, we have short memories as a collective species because of all the brainwashing. And there's nothing that they can tell us that we haven't heard already. It's just a different version, or it's twisted around to make it look like it's something different, to change the color of it or change the key of the song a little bit and and it throws a lot of people off. But generally speaking, we know what's going on. I think if we ask the basic question, if all of mankind asked this question, what do they really do when they go out in space? What do they really do when they go out in space? Find the answer to that question, and you'll get a little bit closer to the truth. Now, there have to be some people that know that. Some have said that they've been to Mars. We've seen pictures of what's up on Mars from more than one source. And I'm not speaking about the washed-out photos that NASA portrays on their website or through the media. And we know there's a heck of a lot going on the moon. There's backyard astronomers are describing seeing all kinds of buildings on the moon. So you don't even have to have an observatory to see that. And yet, you know, they deny it. And that really ties into things that are going on right now on this planet. But I want to give you the opportunity to comment, Jim, before we go off on a tangent.
Well, you know, I've been involved in this stuff off and on for a very long time. I've often told you the stories about the interactions I had with people earlier in my life. Ivan Sanderson was one who investigated all kinds of stuff. And I enjoyed working with him very much. And he exposed a lot of information of the sort we're discussing right now to me on a private level and also at various seminars that he hosted. But what I've noticed over the years is that it doesn't really seem to make any difference how intense the proof is. What seems to matter more than anything else is the level of development, would be a good way of putting it, of the people who receive the information. You know, there's going to just be a statistical distribution of acceptance, just like there's a statistical distribution of consciousness and intelligence. And no matter what you have at your disposal, there's always going to be somebody who'll say, that's phony, it's not real, how does it affect me, I don't care, I'm doing something else, you know, whatever the standard answers are. And I think you'd get that kind of result even if you were standing on stage with a group of grays right next to you. You know, be those people that always conjure up some other explanation. And what it all boils down to, in my opinion, is that certain people are so uncomfortable with anything that is too far outside their level of experience or what they are capable of accepting mentally, morally, spiritually, however you want to define it, that they will refute any proof. Doesn't matter what it is. And then you've got the opposite extreme where there's people who want to believe it for a number of reasons. You know, they got the savior complex or they've got just this passion to verify, you know, something that they've chosen to believe in. And then you've got the sort of central ground where there are people that have a true curiosity and a true hope that we are not alone in the universe. They look at the situation from the standpoint of a very mature and questioning perspective, and they feel that if there was the arrival of other beings, then we would stand to learn a great deal from them. So I think you have this natural distribution. And I have a friend who studied the way the mind works, and he seems to feel that it's pretty much can be divided into nine different groups. But the major subdivisions are in thirds. So you're going to have essentially a third of the population that's in the position to accept such information. You're going to have a third of the population that will reject it even if they're abducted. And you're going to have the middle ground who either don't care or don't see the point or are not worried about it one way or the other. And I just think that that's something we have to contend with. There's going to be a time, I think, when there's enough exposure to all this stuff that it'll have to be accepted by a larger percentage of the population. But until something really amazing occurs, I don't think you're going to see that.
Yeah. What's funny about this is that the third that you're describing, let's say they're in the middle ground, they're apathetic or in denial or excitable about the topic to the extent that they would be irrational and probably are all the time anyway, but with most things, we'll say. Just kidding. I think that those people themselves, regardless of what happens, are not really going to be affected. They're going to stay inside their box. And I think at the same time, those are the people that go see the movies, Star Wars and all the outer space stuff that they produce to convince you somehow that this is only in fantasy. It's only on the silver screen that this can occur. And that it's preposterous to think otherwise. Yet they make billions of dollars putting these stories out there and collecting money for tickets to sit down and eat popcorn and candy and caramelized beverages and pretend that, it's all fantasy. That way, when the real deal is there, then those people are assured to be sufficiently brainwashed to not cause a problem for anybody. and at the same time, they attack those that bring this information out. They don't attack the people making the movies. They attack those that do it for free. You see, who don't have some ulterior motive. The motive is to arrive at the truth and communicate that.
Yeah, but you see, Reich was very well aware of this mechanism, and he really explained it very vividly on a number of different levels. And what he basically talked about was that anything that has the possibility of elevating mankind out of the misery that they are used to into something that's either more enlightening, more truthful, more beneficial, or even more pleasant, they will be totally vilified and rejected simply because of the fact that the fear of changing is greater for those types of people than contending with the misery that they're familiar with. And I could never understand that myself, but I really believe that it's true. I mean, I've seen it. I've seen this type of reaction in other people. And in response to many different things, too, not just the issue of extraterrestrial life. You don't even have to talk about a weird subject, like so-called free energy or alien beings or any of the other unusual things we talk about. I mean, just on the earthbound subject of politics, for instance, holy mackerel, you should see the reactions, especially if you bring out anything that is over and above or beyond the generally perceived concept that you've got Democrats, Republicans, and independents, and everybody knows exactly how the system works. And if you propose anything else, then, you know, you have this type of reaction there also.
Mm-hmm.
So I just think that it's a protective apparatus of some sort that's built into the human psyche. I don't understand what it's good for, but I can tell you one thing. It's exploited to the nth degree by those who are in the know. Because this very mechanism, in my humble opinion, has the greatest impeding factor towards any kind of progress within the human race, you know, by way of spiritual evolution, evolution of consciousness, technological progress, social progress, all of that kind of stuff. It just seems to all hinge on this one common denominator. And there's no way in the world that the people who are at the helm are not playing that card.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
You know, they're going to use that to the nth degree, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of what's going on in space, and in conjunction with some of the technology that's been obtained because of what has been for many years going on in space and down here on this planet and within the planet, or let's say underneath the surface of the planet, there's a lot of information coming out about vortices. You know, I played this song Spirals at the top of the show. There's this obsession with discovering dimensional portals. The one near the Gulf of Aden, which is being guarded by a flotilla of ships, trying to keep people out of that area while they figure out what they're going to do with it. My understanding is that portal has been used by a number of different groups to travel to different parts of space. Let's say it's the a freeway of sorts, if you want to call it that. The expressway to other parts of the galaxy. And these are known, and we're finding them more and more on the planet. It's as though whatever's happening to the mean energy of the planet, these vortices are becoming more apparent, as if they're becoming charged.
Let's look at that from a slightly different perspective, Don.
Okay.
We have talked now till we're blue in the face about the phenomenon of consciousness. And one of the most persistent themes in that entire delivery has always been the fact that things are probably always there right in front of you all along. The only time they get noticed is when your consciousness moves up or evolves or blossoms to the point where suddenly you see what has always been there.
Mm-hmm.
And it could very well be the case with these vortices. You know, getting back to Ivan Sanderson, he wrote a whole book on the subject called Vile Vortices. And they've been around forever. Now, the point is that maybe this same apparatus of tuning out, you know, what you can't accept has been at play, and people just refuse to see that sort of thing. Now there's a change that's coming, or has been coming, and more people are becoming elevated on the scale of consciousness to the point where people are starting to see these anomalies for themselves. I mean, that's a very distinct possibility.
Yes. Then we have these happening in the ocean. Now, maybe it's a different thing going on, but you had made mention to me off the air about whirlpools, and I'd been reading about that, that there was a whirlpool. In fact, the Federation knows about this as well. When I say the Federation, the United Galactic Federation, Galaxy of Hendon.
Right. No, and, I knew who you meant.
Well, I'm saying that for the benefit of the listening audience. So they don't mistake it with some other group that's been named out there.
Right.
Okay.
Well, you know, there have been a number of whirlpools or maelstroms which have been around for a very long time. As a matter of fact, the story 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, the original ending of that story where Captain Nemo accidentally pilots the Nautilus into this huge maelstrom that's well known. It's off the Scandinavian coast somewhere, or then there's another one up around Scotland someplace. And the funny thing about them is they just sit there and spin. I mean, they don't wander around or anything. They've been known for hundreds of years. But the latest phenomenon are these wandering whirlpools that are apparently originating somewhere around the equator, and they're just kind of drifting along the coastline in the Atlantic going north. I often wonder if they're following the same course, you know, due to the Caloris acceleration or any of these other forces that steer hurricanes, you know. But it's just strange that there seems to be more and more of these things lately. People are reporting them. And I wouldn't be a bit surprised if it has something to do with the fact that the Gulf Stream doesn't flow into the Gulf of Mexico in the same way that it used to. The heat distribution is entirely different. And one thing that can generate a vortex in the water is a vertical movement in a given area, what they call a thermal cell, that is associated with a change in density. So you have colder water sinking and warmer water rising up, and they pass one another and cause a swirling action. And then it just kind of moves around following the thermal distribution in the water. But why is all this stuff happening now? That's the weird part. Mm-hmm. Then there was this thing, the other thing we talked about off the air was this supposed discovery down in the Antarctic of this huge magnetic vortex that's just sitting above the South Pole someplace. You know, there's all kinds of things going on. The real problem, in my opinion, is how do you verify this if you're not in the government or in the military or have access to huge personal wealth? The average guy just sits out there and hears all this stuff and tries to fit it into his mosaic of reality, which may or may not happen. And that's the part that's disgruntling for me.
Yes. Well, you remember we talked about Admiral Byrd and his expedition to Antarctica.
Two of them.
You think he learned something that they're discovering now, or they're finally getting around to addressing in a more formal way?
Well, I don't know. That's a hard question to answer. I know when I was a kid, I read all the books I could find on that subject because I felt, now there's something that's so profound that if the reports are true, I couldn't begin to imagine that there wouldn't be a scientific mind on the planet that wouldn't want to know the answer to that. Basically, what Byrd said was that he flew over the North Pole, and he kept on flying north, even though supposedly he, you know, would have assumed he would be flying south after that. But he was so low over the terrain that he went into this huge opening at the pole and came into this entirely different land that had forests and huge herds of animals and all this other stuff, which is certainly not within 1,000 miles of the pole. You just don't have anything like that. And so his conclusion was that the actual geometry of the planet is totally different from what we perceive it to be. It's either hollow or else it has huge dimples or depressions at the poles, and he just happened to fly into one of those. I know he swore by it. He wrote books about it. He gave lectures about it, and he even repeated the journey at the South Pole to see if there was another one down there, and he claimed that there was. And there were other people who went with him. It'd be interesting to know who was on those flights besides Bird, because he wasn't alone. Somebody knows. Somebody knows all this stuff. But for some reason, it's kept secret like everything else.
Yeah, well, it probably reveals that little tidbit of information that suddenly makes these omnipotent beings that like to call themselves the Illuminati a little further down the ladder than they projected to us. And I got to tell you, I've never bought their sales pitch in that regard. There's nothing elite about these people. In fact, they abuse the word. They defile it. You know, but that's
I mean, quite the contrary. The only thing I see them having is a lot of money, which essentially they got from us. And they've used that money to put themselves in a position of knowledge, which they may very well be privileged to have. But that's only because they don't share it. And so once you're, you know, a mega hog, not only financially, but intellectually or in terms of knowledge, I don't see that that makes you elite. I think it makes you, you know, very selfish, self-centered, and narrow-minded. I don't see anything elite about it.
Yeah, I agree. Mega hog, you said?
Yeah, a mega hog.
Yeah, we have Gog and Megahog. Oh, my goodness. Well, there's obviously, there are some greater forces at work here. This is what I'm getting at. And I think the things that we've heard over the past 2 weeks, you and I had discussed the possibility of our listening audience taking their own radiological readings around where they live and sort of reporting into us during the show or via email or however they feel comfortable getting the word out as to what they're finding out. But in general, we come to the conclusion that there's a heck of a lot of disinformation going out there, that any radiation that's being tracked may be the result of something other than a nuclear meltdown. You have some comments to make in that regard. Ken Adachi said that people in Japan felt that we were overreacting to what was going on. Of course, they have no idea what we're being told or what we're not being told.
But well, that's true. I was talking to a friend of mine in Japan just 2 days ago, and he was telling me that radiation problem over there is non-existent. So I asked him point blank, I said, well, let's assume that's true. Where is this giant plume of radioactive gas coming from that is supposedly working its way across the Pacific, across North America, and is now on the verge of entering Portuguese airspace? And all he could say is, I don't know. Don't know anything about it. And, you know, my own interpretation of it is that to have a plume that extensive and that formidable, especially carrying the variety of isotopes that has supposedly been reported and measured, would have to come from some amazingly powerful blast. I don't think there'd be anything left of the reactor, never mind the little hole in the roof. And I kind of have the feeling that your intuition is probably correct, that maybe, I don't doubt that they're measuring something, because this information has come from more than one agency, but I don't see any reason why they couldn't have sprayed stuff in the air, you know, the same way they do with the chemtrails.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's all, you know, for the sake of bamboozling the public and for, you know, this need that they have to constantly engender higher and higher octaves of fear in the public. That's, no, I mean, you hear these other reports, too. Like, somebody told me just the other day that the milk in California now has been detected that it has 300% more radiation than the limits set by the AMA or the, you know, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission or whoever the heck sets those kind of things. And, you know, that's all very well and good, but who's checked it? You know, I mean, that's the thing that bugs me. You know, okay, if it's really there, then, you know, somebody other than this anomalous source should either do an independent measurement that confirms or denies this information. I think we take everything to heart much too easily.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Stories. Now, there was one story that didn't make sense, and I reported this. I think I mentioned this to you off the air, how they had cleared a whole town of its inhabitants and had them go into a gymnasium. Now, I don't know about you, but I think if a person's house is pretty well sealed, they're going to be better off than they are in a big gymnasium. But they had 8 people in this gymnasium. Then they show you pictures of a ghost town. Then they go back to the gymnasium, and they're talking to the 8 people, and they're saying they're worried because they're not in their home, but they don't want to die. And then they show you this image, a close-up image of a Geiger counter going off. I did the impersonation of that last night. I won't repeat it again tonight. But they made it a point to show you this, to get it in your mind that, oh, yes, this was a reading that they got there in Japan. But keep in mind, these are edited sequences of videotape jumping from one place to another place and back to the first one again. So by the time you see these images and hear these sounds, they've planted the seed that empty town, people in gymnasium, and then the Geiger counter, there must be radiation, you see. But the giveaway is that there's only 8 people in the gymnasium. There's a heck of a lot more people than 8 in the whole town. Now I heard there were other gymnasiums too. So were those the 8 that were left over? They decided to put in a single gymnasium? It's where they did the story that it didn't make sense. And they got these people to cry and be all upset. Maybe they told them, if you don't act like you're sad, we're going to shoot you. You know, so you better. Who knows? I'm sort of joking, but you can't put anything past anybody because we're not hearing the truth. They're sticking to the story that there was a meltdown. C.S. Livingstone said last night on the show that he saw photographs where you could actually see into the units themselves, and there were no fuel rods installed. So if that's the case, then there wasn't a meltdown.
Well, my friend told me that, well, actually his story was very different from what we heard over here. He said that the building that gave the most problems was actually the repository for the spent fuel rods.
Mm-hmm.
And they are normally stored underwater in these big soaking pits, and they have a protective building over the top of them. And it was his comment that locally it was believed that the tsunami and the earthquake and whatnot had demolished that building.
And cracked it, yes.
And therefore, you know, that's part of where, you know, some of this radiation was leaking from. But, you know, I don't buy that because I forget now if they're titanium or aluminum or what the heck they are, but they have the fuel rods themselves are essentially a hollow pipe with a very thin wall. And inside that pipe are these little cylinders of enriched uranium or plutonium or whatever the reactor was designed to use as a fuel. And they're literally stacked, you know, one on top of the other inside this confined...
Tube.
It's not mm-hmm. so little. It's about an inch and a quarter, inch and a half. But nonetheless, the fuel elements are inside of this, and the ends are sealed. So, I mean, unless I'm really missing something, I don't see what would happen if the roof came off the building. I don't see what would happen if salt water, you know, came into the isolated pool that these things are stored in. Now, I grant you that for the sake of suppressing radiation, they may very well use heavy water in those pools because, you know, the tritium oxide or deuterium oxide has a much more massive nucleus, and it would act as a moderator for certain types of radioactive emissions. But even if that was the case, if salt water suddenly replaced that, I can see how it might be annoying. I can see how it might even change the local readings at that location. But I really don't see how it would get this incredible family of isotopes all the way up in the stratosphere. And as far as the other blast is concerned, you know, the one that put the hole in the reactor's, what do they call it, the confinement structure. If there was a blast powerful enough to deliver all of that radioactive material all the way up to the stratosphere and then a continuous plume from there across the Pacific, across North America, across the Atlantic, and over toward Europe, I think that the whole bloody building would have been disintegrated. You wouldn't just have a hole in the roof. So something doesn't add up. Of course, I'm not a nuclear physicist, but, you know, it just doesn't make sense to me from a common sense point of view.
Yeah, an earthquake or the fuel rods shouldn't be the cause of the roof blowing off the place.
Well, I think they blame that on the tsunami. But you know, even there, it raises a lot of eyebrows because, you know, I worked in those containment buildings. I know what they're like. You know, you got enormous amounts of reinforced concrete there that are like 5 and 6 feet thick. I think even if it was a 30-foot tsunami, who cares? You know, it would just wash over the dome, give it a good clean. I don't see how it would be responsible for the kind of explosion that put a hole in it.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of people who think that since the earthquake was very probably man-made, that maybe there was a real bomb planted, you know, in the building somewhere to blow a hole in it. And that if both events were artificially planned, it certainly wouldn't be difficult to synchronize them.
Mm-hmm. Now, there is evidence, I'm not going to say where right now, but there is evidence that this came from space, that this assault on Japan and the Ring of Fire is due to a weapon that was used. All the intuitives I've talked to all come to the same conclusion independently. And it's remarkable when you just speak to somebody you know who's very discerning and you ask them flat out, what's your gut feeling tell you about that event in Japan? You get the same response from each person. Now, that is not the source of the information. That's what we're picking up is happening. And it makes a heck of a lot more sense what we're talking about than what we've been told. Because we're getting there's radiation and we're getting there's not radiation from the same media. You see? Now we have people from two different sources, yours and Kenadachi's source, who are both saying that the people here are overreacting to what's going on. Well, isn't that what we have been saying all along? In all these instances, every false flag event they pull, some speculated that HAARP was behind this, and those of us that know enough about HAARP all come to the conclusion that HAARP is not capable on the Earth of doing that specific kind of damage when it's not turned on to do that. And we know that it wasn't. Whether people want to think HAARP did it or not doesn't change the fact that it wasn't. Okay? Again, so there is an element in space that has an interest in being here that is likely the culprit behind this. And there are certain factions around the planet that know who these beings are. And when you take that into consideration, this whole thing of amassing huge swaths of land across the United States and putting it under this jurisdiction of the federal government, even though it belongs to the people of the country, not the servants of the people, even though that's going on, now it makes sense as to a deal that may have been cut with another group, just like they did with the Greys and the reptilians. The same thing, because they're obsessed with obtaining technology, anything to allow them to control the solar system and the galaxy. And they're really quite foolish in trying to catch up to technology that they couldn't even imagine, let alone giving it to them or allowing them to acquire it would be as insane as what they do to this planet. No other species other than one that was interested in taking over this planet would share anything with them. And that's been the case with reptilians and other groups that have come over here for thousands of years. Any comment, Jim? I didn't mean to go on so long, but
wanted to clear. It's not a problem, Don. I mean, you certainly have always provided worthwhile points of view on all this stuff. The only thing I can say with any degree of certainty after all the time that I've tried to investigate this stuff is that there's definitely more going on than meets the eye. And I really believe that a lot of people are starting to question these things. Whether or not they're ready to accept, you know, that a lot of this stuff has its origins off-world, it's kind of a separate issue. But I think a lot of people believe that the government has more at their disposal than they'd like us to believe. I mean, I've spoken to people, you know, who are familiar with Area 51 when it was a hot spot and the other areas where the government does things. And they all swear that they see stuff flying around out there that's not like anything that we're supposed to have. And their conclusion isn't necessarily that aliens are involved. Their conclusion is that our own government, through black ops and through illegal funding, you know, has produced another class of weapons and vehicles that the average guy in the public arena just doesn't know about. But both stories could be true. You know, there's no reason why they have to be mutually exclusive.
Yeah, I agree. Well, you know, you touched on an interesting point there, because that phrase "need to know" comes up again. You know, that phrase right there is is it gets your gander up too. This idea that, oh, you don't have to know this. You don't have to know the truth. You know, where do these people get off making those kinds of decisions? You know?
Well, that's because they're elite, you see.
Yeah. Well, we'll keep our antennas up and pay attention to what's going on in Japan. Of course, they've been enduring more earthquakes. G.S. Livingstone noted that they were happening 10 minutes apart on the 11th when all of this started. So there seems to be a pattern of intention behind all of this, which again supports what we're saying. And to tell you the truth, the powers that be, those that call themselves the elite, are not even in a position to release the information if they wanted to. That's kind of my take on it. Because they're not talking at all about what's going on, other than making up lies. Now, certainly the people living in Japan know what's happening. So we can only pray that they get the word out and keep us posted, and that we pray for them, for their recovery, and their return to some semblance of sanity in their lives and their surroundings. And, you know, we have a responsibility, Jim. I just feel this in the bottom of my being, that we have to be responsible for finding out what is going on and putting a stop to it. I mean, we see the impact or the effect of what's going on, but we have to get at the cause.
Well, I think the cause is already known. What the problem is proving it. But, you know, I have a feeling, and I wouldn't be surprised if you have a similar one, that you're going to see this type of assault in other areas of the world. It's not just going to be repeated again on Japan. I think that whatever happened in Japan may have been a test case for other things that whoever did this has in mind. And I think once that starts to happen with any degree of regularity, shall we say, that even people that are dumb as a box of rocks are going to start to realize that something's not right.
Even George W. Bush?
Well, you know, he may have his hands full, you know, just navigating around the room, but I'm talking about people with average intelligence.
Yeah. Well, in the meantime, we are out of time, Jim, but I think we could maybe look into what might be going on in Antarctica or around the South Pole and the North Pole, for that matter. Let's dig into that a little bit. Be a good topic for next week.
Yeah, okay, that sounds exciting. As a matter of fact, it's interesting for me because I haven't really delved into that area for quite some time. So I could do a quick brush up and see what's current with those things. Mm-hmm. Somebody must be interested in it.
Yeah, there are a lot of people interested in it. Give us a closing comment, if you would, something that you won't regret having said at the end of the show.
I'm not quite sure how to interpret that, but
when you wake up tomorrow morning, geez, I wish I would have said this. Now's your moment to do that.
Well, you know, the thing that has always amazed me, and it seems that we have approached this very subject tonight and somehow not really landed on it, is the fact that we already know how these governing groups, if we want to be generous and call them that, are always looking for something to give them an edge. They're always looking for something that can allow them to tighten their control, make more money, subjugate more people, etc. And whenever there's something of that ilk going on, you'll see a huge flurry of activity from these people. And I've kind of used that over the years, whenever I was in a position to track it, to try and get an inkling about what's really going on, because what they consider important is going to affect our lives much more than the things we consider important. And right now, there's a huge flurry of activity at the South Pole, and there are other areas, you know, that we have mentioned in different shows where there are also huge flurries of activity. And I think those are the things that we need to track. But more interestingly, I think that's the duty and the responsibility of all human beings to tune into this stuff. You know, once it becomes general knowledge of what's going on, it isn't going to continue to go on. Something's going to change. And I think that should be everybody's primary goal, is to stick their nose into this stuff until we find out what the truth is. If you wait for them to tell you, you'll be long dead. It'll never come out. So whatever's going on is our responsibility to expose it. Those are my closing words.
Well said, Jim, and I wish you a good night's sleep as a result. All right. Well, I want to remind the listening audience that Jim Murray will be back with us next week on Friday. And as usual, Jim, you are a gem. I should call you Jim the Gem.
Well, I'm flattered. Thank you, Don.
I wish you a good night and a great weekend. Folks, that wraps it up. You've been listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com and our special guest, my co-host on Friday nights, resident science advisor, Jim Murray. Special thanks to Wind Talkers Radio Network for broadcasting the show either live or in an archive over at BBS Radio tonight. We had Seth Hendrick on the sound. I want to thank Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, and most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. Join me next Monday night for my special guest, Dr. Atru Ott. In the meantime, I wish everyone a great weekend and a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.